everyone, welcome to the Talking Split podcast for this week, Basketball Victoria's coaching podcast. With me I have Mike Zeffel, Justin Shaw, the high performance coaches for Metro and Country. Welcome guys.
G'day Robbie.
Good to be back Robbie.
It is. Apologies on our end for the lack of podcast last week. We ran into some technical difficulties down in Geelong.
I like how he says our end when it was clearly your fault. So
yeah, I don't know that that's necessarily the case, but Justin's social life got in the way of our podcasting unfortunately. And so
turn
consequently,
up.
We're
turn
a week
up.
Off. We're a week off. So we are back this week. What we are going to do is an AJC's review. But the obligatory, please like, share, follow, retweet, everything that Zeppel doesn't do, please do.
Yes.
In terms of our podcast, we do want to try and spread the word as much as we can. And the more interaction we get, the better. Hopefully we're presenting a decent product that will help you with your coaching as well. So without any further ado, I suppose we'll kick it right off with AJC's last week down in Geelong for under-18s. Justin, do you want to review the country groups?
Ugh, country groups, huh? No, for us it was a bit of a mixed week, to be honest. We always felt, start with the girls, that we had a gold medal group, and on a couple of occasions we showed we were probably good enough to do that, and then other occasions our inconsistency hurt us. And I guess from our point of view, from a program, it's I said this to Jared afterwards, it's kind of nice when, as a program, you're disappointed to win bronze. So really good for the girls to finish off the week strongly and claim a medal. But yeah, definitely not the week that we were expecting to have. That said, the girls' comp was great. Like we ran into SA Metro in the semi, and the girl Vidmar, like, she was unbelievable. And they were definitely the better team on the day. So all hats off to them and being able to progress through to the gold medal game. I guess for us, some standouts through the week, definitely Georgia Amore went to another level, I felt, in her ability and really controlled a number of games there for us. Some real outstanding shooting in some games by Olivia Pollard and Ali Knights early in the week. And I guess our bottom age athletes in the group really stood up and had a pretty good week overall. For the boys, I guess we knew the quarterfinal we had to avoid was anyone with size, so we didn't want to see Vic Metro or Queensland South. And the last 3 years we've played Vic Metro in a quarterfinal and let that one go. So disappointing on that front. Probably realistic for us going into it. We always thought we'd have to be great to go top four, but we thought we're probably the fifth best group there. And to finish seventh, you know, a little bit lower than what we would have liked. But the beauty of the boys' comp this year, and we'll talk about that in depth a bit more, but just how deep the tournament was. You know, really I felt seven or eight teams could, on their day, get anyone. So, yeah, I think, you know, Jay Rantle, Liam Herbert really had some good performances. Kai Daniels in his first Nationals was outstanding on the boards all week. And again, our bottom ages in Ethan Figa, Keith Robinson, they really showed that, you know, they're just getting better and better as they get older. So hopefully, you know, next year will be a better outcome for us.
Yep. And Mike, with the Metros?
Pretty good, Robbie. Probably the most important thing, I got a 5-star review from Shirley on my Airbnb from last week. So thank you, Shirley. Lovely accommodation down there in Geelong West. Really proud of the groups. Really proud of the groups. I thought both coaching staffs did a great job in the prep and also last week. Start with the boys. Shot 48% across the week, which across nine games is really good. Ran into a really, really good team. We spoke about WA Metro before we went to Geelong and said that they had some studs and absolutely, like, studs and then
future
some.
Future boomers.
Yeah, and just coach did a great job. They got better through the week. That's what you look for in these competitions. Like, how does your team track during the week? And they got blown out by 30 on day one and then win the tournament. Like, that's tracking in the right direction. I thought the boys competed great. I thought we had a few first-time. We had five first-time boys played at Nationals, and I think that crew did a really good job representing their state. So I was pleased with the way the boys shot the ball through the week. They shot the ball better than in years past and played really unselfishly. So 255 assists for the week. 70% of their field goals made were on assists, which is a credit to the unselfishness, high IQ, and also, you know, playing for each other, which we all expect. Finishing with the bronze medal, tough win on the last day against Tassie, who were also really good throughout the week. So, yeah,
absolutely.
You know, that was a it was a 13-point game, but it was really really a close affair. So, proud of the boys. Girls were awesome. I thought Reese and his staff did a tremendous job. Shot the ball well all week. Had a really tough game on, I think it was Anzac Day Wednesday, where, you know, we won on the buzzer. And they kind of used that and rebounded from that and really started tracking in the right direction post that game against New South Wales. So the girls shot the three ball at 38.5% for the week, which is probably better than I would have expected going into the in the tournament. Free throws shot it at 77%. I thought they the coaching staff and the way they put the girls into position really helped them sort of showcase their abilities.
Like shooting stat, you're saying, is an all-time stat.
I didn't want to go there, mate, but now you've prompted me. went through. I just went back through the records, Robbie. You know I like a good number, Robbie. And I went through the numbers of the last decade, back to kind of 2009, and that three-point field goal percentage number was the highest number since about 2010. Any competition, boys, girls, 16s, 18s, 20s. So, it is a point of difference. We talk about shooting the basketball on the podcast a lot, but if you can make that many threes across a week, that is significant. Put into context, they made 89 threes last week, which is the highest in the competition. Last year, they made 34. So if you're going to make 55 more threes in a week, it kind of adds up, especially at that clip. So well done to the girls. Well done to the coaching staffs.
You love how he's backtracked. Like when we were talking about this beforehand, I was like, this is the highest number of all time. Of no all one time. Has ever beaten this.
Look,
and now it's going back to 2010. I feel like you put some mayo on the shooting percentage.
The listeners are looking for some sort of honesty out of one of us three. So if, I've got to provide it, I'll provide it. I went back, to 2010.
So the other thing we've also got to mention is the Kevin Coon Cup team.
Absolutely.
Which had a win down there. Is that you saw a little bit of these guys during
first
the week?
Time ever, Robbie, that is historical. First time ever the Vicks won the Kevin Coombs Cup. Awesome job to coaching staff, athletes, to our inclusion department for getting that off the Definitely. Ground and giving these athletes the opportunity to compete. Jonty, the man, averaged 24-14 for the week. He was unbelievable. He plays a ton of high-level wheelchair basketball here in Australia, and he was the captain of the group and did a tremendous job. So they beat WA on the last day after losing to them on Thursday night. So to rebound and come through and win those last three games down the stretch, awesome job to the KCC group.
Excellent.
I think in these tournaments, when you look back, the funniest part is that one game in the tournament that you look and go, all right, well, what if? And for the girls, Vic Metro, it was New South Wales yeah. Metro. Like, they were down 20, I think, at one point. Found a way to get it, as you said, turn it around. In the boys, it was actually game one of the tournament, Queensland, South, WA Met.
Yeah.
WA Met lose by 30. You know, everyone's written them off. I guess we started giving our boy Coops a little bit of grief about, you know, what's going on here. We've given him the props to win it. But as you said, over the course of the week, really found their legs and found their identity and got the win. So that's the beauty of tournament play. But just being able to find that one game where you go, well, what if it did go the other way? You know, does WA really find their legs and get a roll on? If Vic Met dropped that, now it's a different semi, different quarter.
Correct.
What does it look like? So
momentum's huge with that too. So you look at the Vic Metro girls, as you say, Mike, like they turned their tournament around. They were not turning it around, I suppose, but that game in particular, they had a really poor first half, started playing in the second half, and then didn't look like they were going to lose after that, whereas New South Metro dropped that game on the siren after being up 20 and then lose the next night as well. Like, that's a really hard momentum shift, and it's difficult to get your kids to move on from that too. Like, it's a really heartbreaking, and mentally it's a draining loss as well when you're up by that much.
Absolutely.
And then you drop the game. What do you do with your kids?
I mean, tournament play challenges your culture and challenges your resilience, because it's such a long week. Like, those kids and coaches got their Thursday last week, and you play the following Saturday for the championship or the medal or whatever, whatever place, and anything can go wrong on any one of those days. So really, what you instill in the lead up in the 3 months before it within your high performance culture, that's what will get you through in a lot of those tight situations.
And the tournament's always broken into three. It's your round games, get your positioning in your pool, then it's your quarter final. Like, you've got to take care of your quarter final. We had a few upsets on that day. I know, like, our girls were seeded third and got second spot in that, actually New South Metro in that one. And you know, but you've got to get your quarter final won, and then it's about, all right, now go get a medal. And the teams that kind of handle that quarter final day the best generally tend to roll on and do something special in the week.
And it is a tough game too, that quarter final. So even if you finish on top of your pool, I know there was a tournament maybe a couple of years ago, the under 18s, where 1, 2, 3, and 4 from one pool rolled the other pool completely. It does happen. Like, it's, there's no easy game there.
Last year, I think in Townsville, Queensland South finished on top, and New South Wales Country popped them and ended up going through to the semi. Yeah. Like, it happens.
And this year in the boys, gold, silver, bronze went to teams out of the same pool.
Mm.
So what the quarterfinal does is allow true balance in the tournament. I mean, the other things that would be better in this tournament, in my opinion, is a couple more teams to really flesh it out and get playing like teams earlier on. You know, we had that chat earlier about a great paper that was written a few years ago, Robbie, that sat, on, sat on a desk. Dr. Schuller. Yeah. But yeah, like, you know, if this tournament could get to 16 teams, four pools, go top two in your pool, and then it's a Division 1, Division 2 scenario, and now you're playing like-for-like teams right off the bat.
It's like a FIBA, basically.
Emulate a world championship. Well, that's what these nationals are meant to be about, is prepping for national team opportunities as well. So simulating what they're going to face when they do get to a world championship, I think, is pretty important.
And that's how Euro champs stack up too as well, and it challenges, you know, teams around the world to make sure their prep and their kind of 2 years going into a tournament is really, really good. Because if you do mess the tournament up, then it will set you back a couple of years.
Absolutely. And I think the tournament side of things is something that we lose a lot of, because obviously our season goes for so long here, our grading goes for so long. We don't obviously get a lot of time to play tournaments.
You won't, mate. You always go back to that. It's a really good point. A really good point. Like, we play a lot of games, so we're probably really good at playing a one-off game, but how good are we in tournament play?
Yeah.
And I think it's a great point. And the Euros play the contrary. Play a lot of tournaments every, you know, quarter, maybe once every 3 or 4 months.
You definitely need a mix of seasonal play and tournament play, but our problem in our country is we play way too many games, not enough practice. And it's all season based. Yeah. You know, like, there's three tournaments a year.
This might be another podcast.
Oh, it should be another podcast. Like,
but no, it's a valid point. It's a really valid point, though, because coaching a season is not easy, but it's a lot easier than having to coach a tournament where you've got to scout, coach your game, deal with results, move on quickly, and prepare for the next one, all within about a 4 hour span.
And the turnaround in 24 hours, like playing a style of play that's this example versus that example, and being able to get your team ready for it. And I guess the one thing that I've noticed, you know, going to nationals now for a stack of years, the coaching's actually getting better and better. Like, you are seeing a plan in place of what teams are trying to achieve to certain styles. I guess sometimes you also see, oh, let's just go back into the zone, which is definitely something we saw a lot of without disruption in play. So there's parts on that, but I do really genuinely believe the coaching's getting better, and the exposure to more, I guess, styles and systems is helping that along the way.
And game planning, we spoke a lot about this last week in Geelong, in the stands, is as an observer, I would try to figure out what the game plan is for X team that I'm watching. And that was kind of a bit of my, you know, not professional development, but okay, let's see what I would do in this situation, or are they doing something different? You know, is this a good idea to me, bad idea, whatever that is? I think that's really important. Like, how do you game plan for a specific opponent given your personnel? Because just because BA preaches one thing, just because Basel Victoria preaches one thing, doesn't mean that it'll work for every team. And you've got to figure out what parts you can take and use, and they will work for your team. And, you know, what else may I have to do to get the most out of this group and for the result at the end of the day?
I also think in nationals, like, some of the best coaching is sometimes the teams that aren't at medal rounds. Like WA Country and the boys, I think it was Coach Dukas was coaching them that week. Like, they did a great job. Every game, they gave themselves a chance.
Yep.
they played hard, but they also got better as the week went on, and you could see just, you know, the plan evolving over the course of time. And for, we all know, WA country, the challenge of prep is the biggest challenge.
Getting together is tough. Geography, so, our special, you know, over our the
course, yeah, over the course of the tournament, it's great when you see that improvement as it rolls on. New South Metro and the boys were another one for me that, you know, I had them as a little bit of a darkie on being able to maybe jag a medal in the tournament. They were just one of those deep teams, but they really got better and deservedly got the fifth place on their last 3 days. It was really good basketball. Like, they were to the wire in every game. But their style really improved, and I think that was through their guard play and what they were trying to do there. But, you know, it's good to see when teams are evolving like that, as opposed to trending the other way.
And WA Country beat SA Metro in the boys at the end, which we obviously don't like to see our mates over in Adelaide get pop, Robbie.
Don't know what you're talking about. But, I mean, in terms of style of play from the tournament, you touched on the fair bit of zone. Were you seeing a lot of sort of stagnant zone, or was it disruptive zone? So trapping passes, like different bump outs and those sorts of things, or was it just sort of run back, stand in the zone and hope the teams miss?
I never want to be critical of what you see, because you don't really know what, you know, prep and theories, what's gone into it. But I guess the one thing that I was seeing a lot of was, yeah, more carnival type zone versus actually, you know, trying to trap areas or having disruption prior to falling to it. And then there was the other side of it where there was extensive pressing up the floor, but almost erratic pressing where, you know, you're just hoping that you speed them up to a point where they make an error. So somewhere in the middle of that, I think's the beauty spot. And, you know, to me, the teams that did have a little bit of a balance with that were the ones there at the tail end of the week, and also played to their strength of who they were. That's why WA Metro won it.
Yeah,
they let their length open and their athleticism open it up, and then go use that to the advantage.
See, disruption is different for different people too. Like, if you were there watching last week, disruption for a lot of teams was up the floor, 94 feet, run and jump, heaps of pressure. The disruption I did not see last week, maybe at all, was the trap of a ball screen.
Yep.
Didn't see it. The trap of the post, did not see it. And they're disruptive. But whether or not it's a dominant post or not, if you go trap the post, that is disrupting their rhythm offensively. Yeah. So, again, being a little bit creative with what your disruption in, just because you see a 1-2-2 press, it might not work for your group, but a ball trap might work for your group. And finding that out, that's good coaching at the end of the day.
Well, that's the hard part, I suppose. You only have limited time with your group. You almost need to pick your poison a little bit on what are we going to be. Like, Justin, you're about to go through it, obviously, with your world qualifiers as well. You don't have 7-footers just lying around that you can go and grab. So are you better off being really good at what you are, or are you trying to make yourself into something you're not?
Absolutely. And part of our selection out of nationals was, all right, let's not try and be something we're not. We're going to be versatile. We're going to be athletic. We're going to be disruptive and find athletes that can help that cause. And I think that's pretty important when you do get, because basically they're inheriting a group. Right? These are the athletes you get to choose from. Figure it out. But then figure out a little bit of style from that can help. You know, we're talking about that side of it, but also did see some great stuff. You know, like a few times teams took the main ball carrier basically out of the game by denying him and not letting them get it. And so there were some really good ideas and systems there that definitely helped get a couple wins along the way.
And what is certain after watching that week is that kids are getting way more comfortable playing in on-ball screens offensively. Like, every team is running some concept of on-ball screen, middle pick and roll, you dribble handoff, flow action into side on-ball, like whatever it is. They're doing it a lot at clubland and also in their city or their state, and they're just getting more comfortable with it, and they're able to make more plays out of it. The reads are getting a little bit better out of it. So I think that, again, we spoke about this before, is how are we teaching that skill set and those concepts within our clubs and in our programs.
I think the three-point line was really evident that everyone tried to have a way to use that.
Yeah.
Like, a lot more threes going up than kind of I remember. I haven't gone through the stats like you, Zet, but
make them up. it doesn't matter.
It was definitely every team had an ability to create perimeter shots, so that was something that, from my point of view, was pretty pleasing to see. I agree with the ball screen to a point, but I also feel players playing on their weak hand or the other side of the floor, that ball screen wasn't as effective. So that was kind of interesting, and people just living with the one way. So, all right, ball screen comes, I'm turning the corner every time, as opposed to reading D. I think there are areas we can continue to help the athletes with. But yeah, overall, like, I think the tournament had great shots taken. Like, there weren't too many games where I sat there and went, what are they jacking up? Like, you know, the C2 give it up mentality was definitely a lot higher than I guess last year's 18s I felt as well.
Talking about ball screens, obviously it's a fairly important part of the game too. Given the limited preparation, how many different ways do you really want to be teaching your kids to defend an on-ball coming into a tournament like this?
12 or 13, Robbie.
Yeah, and this is where it sort of comes from. Like, I know when I've been involved with teams, we've usually had two, and the third was a switch. And it's like, hey, if all else fails, just switch it and we'll work it out. Like, whether it be a trap, a hard show, yeah, whatever the case may be, ice the on-ball, however it is. I speak to some other coaches and they say, well, we have like five or six different ways to defend an on-ball. And it's like, well, is that really an efficient use of your time? And granted, you might need it at times, but can you make do with less is more and be really good at what you are good at?
Personnel driven, Robbie. So if you're really athletic out there, then switching or hustling becomes one of those ways that you can absolutely impact the game. I read a lot about and have tinkered with having one base. Like, what is their go-to coverage, no matter where we are on the floor and no matter what the deal is? And then from there, are you able to game plan and scout for something that will work against a particular opponent or a particular angle or position of a ball screen? I think given we're dealing with, you know, the 16s will have 14 and 15-year-old athletes, and we're dealing with 15 and 16-year-olds last week, is how much is too much for kids to get really good at one thing? And if you can get really good at one or two things, do you need 7 or 8 or 9 ways to defend it?
To me, it's you want to be great at something. So there's, you know, don't be good at everything, be great at something, and as Zeb said, that's your go-to. For me, splitting the court up. So there's three parts of the defensive floor for me, the two outside thirds and the middle third, and then whether the screen's coming from above or below. And just whatever rules you want from there, just make sure you've got those covered, because I do think a screen from above versus a screen from below are very different ways you need to... are very different ways that you need to defend things. Yeah. But making sure you've got a plan for middle ball screen and side ball screen off that. That, to me, as long as you've got something in play, and again, that should be personnel driven. You might have kids that can show really well. You might have kids that, you know, just slow and plodders and you want to drop them off, whatever it may be. But they're the areas of the floor that you need to make sure you've got a rule for.
Yep, most definitely. So what were the any other things that sort of stood out at the tournament, I suppose, like any great actions you saw or different defenses you saw? Like, obviously there was a feel of the flow type offense across the board, but was there anything else that sort of stood out for you guys, either late clock situations or whatever it is?
I think the big one is just how different the under 16s and under 18 tournaments are. Like, athleticism and speed are completely different at these two events.
That was mine. Speed with the ball in your hand, just how great it was.
Yeah, and then more so on the boys' side than the girls' side. I'll talk about the girls' side in a second, but on the boys' side, verticality and being able to finish over the top of, now we're talking, what, Queensland South had multiple 6'6", 6'7" guys. So being able to finish over the top of an outstretched hand, over the top of a challenge shot, that really now is a separator. And if you are unable to make those plays at that level, it quickly is evident. So I think the athleticism is, you know, common sense, but it really does stand out and challenges your skill set.
Anything, Justin?
No, basically the speed with the ball in the hand to me went another level. The ability to pass off the bounce, again, just getting better. And some kids that just really flat out shot the ball well. You know, that again just kind of went to another level for me. I think national championship level of basketball is getting better. like the spacing on the floor, you know, the ball movement, not just playing ISO ball, like all those sorts of things. I think the way we want to play is really evident in the tournament, and doesn't have to be a flow-based system, but, you know, I was pretty happy to see what I saw, especially at the top end. I'm not going to lie, Zepp and I went through about 7 cups of coffee per day sitting there all day, and there were some games that it was a tough watch, but overall, every day, you know, you had one outstanding game and then a good bunch of high-quality hoop.
Mm. Good coffee in Geelong too, Robbie.
Yeah, oh, really good.
No doubt.
Really King of the castle.
all the Talking Split listeners hitting you guys up, hopefully, for their free coffees whilst they were down there.
A few smart asses out there.
Yeah, that's all right. There's always a couple. So what's next for these guys? So this age group's done effectively for AJCs until under-20s, which rolls in next February, I think.
Yep,
so what's next for these kids?
It's pretty big for this crop of kids. Like, we've selected our squad for camp, which actually starts tomorrow. Shannon would have done the same with the girls. So, and I think they've got camp the following weekend. And then basically it's the World Championship and prep for that. So it's a huge load point right now for these athletes, and something we're really mindful of going into camp is you know, what is the appropriate amount of intensity in what we do. But yeah, basically, great. You know, the talent level was outstanding on the boys' side. There was multiple athletes that really stood up and showed great progression from years gone by, which is the most pleasing thing, I guess, for them. Outside of identification for a national team, the other really pleasing thing was how many NBL coaches were in the building.
Mm.
You know, Joe Wright, Trevor Gleeson, Dean Vickerman, multitude of other
Andrew
staff.
Gaze was there.
Andrew was there. Yeah. Like, it's really good that the NBL is now looking back at this level of athlete. And I think what we're going to see is more and more teams really, you know, look to select kids coming out of this. You know, for me, there were multiple boomers in the building, future boomers in the building. You know, like, I know on our team we're going to be blessed with some genuine talent. So that to me was the other pleasing part. And, you know, I think this tournament's opened up a bit of a pathway for a few kids throughout the week.
That would be a cool place for this to get to. Like, if we were able to get 2 or 3 more NBL franchises, and this under 18 nationals and the 20s becomes the recruiting spot for the NBL. Because there will be kids that want to do the US pathway, and they absolutely should pursue that if it suits them in their situation. But there's a handful of kids where the best thing for them is to finish year 12, go and join an NBL franchise and pursue their studies or apprenticeship or whatever they're doing while they're playing their hoop, but staying home. And I think it'd be cool if, you know, a few more franchises around could start to promote this as a really viable stay-at-home pathway.
Absolutely.
Probably just a little bit of a touch on as well. What is the purpose of AJCs? Like, it's a holistic view, I suppose. Like, it'll depend a little bit on who you ask. In terms of, some will say, hey, you just have to win it and bad luck, that's it. Some will say, hey, it's to produce kids for junior Australian teams. Others will say, hey, it's to produce international.
It's a junket.
I think
that's enough of your week with Shirley.
It's definitely a can of worms right there. But you know, I know for Zepp and I, it's nice to win it, but our sole purpose in our job is to produce international athletes. So what we're looking for in that week is, do we have blue chip athletes that can progress to the next level? If the byproduct out of that's medals, great. If we went to our head coaches in those teams, their sole purpose is about winning a medal, and fair enough, because the pressure is, if you don't win, then things get reviewed. And I think there's got to be a better mindset around our national championships, and that while every state puts such an emphasis on winning it, we're probably missing out on the great development opportunity of what the national championship can be. That said, winning is part of development, so it's kind of a mixed little bag in there for me. And I don't know what the 100% right answer is, but to me, making sure every athlete is getting better over the course of the campaign and comes out the other end a bit better is probably the ultimate goal.
It probably comes back to before that with selection too. Like, there might be some kids that you sit there and say, hey, this is absolutely a kid that's in our best team, but you know we'll never kick on to be a Boomer or an Opal as well, and what do you do with that kid as well. Like, do you sacrifice your team in the short term for long-term development of the sport? And it's hard to convince people that that's what you need to do as well.
For us as 16s, it's definitely been more of a future projection than a now projection. So I think we've all seen the bigger, stronger kids that probably aren't, you know, basketball's not their number one thing and they're not really trying to progress. And I know we've tried to influence that there's a certain type of player that we want in every age group, but at 16s, that certain player often is a lot lighter than some of the other athletes they'll go against. So at 18s, I think the best of the best. And, you know, generally speaking, the top 10 kids are going to be the top 10 kids, and it's probably one or two that are always unlucky, but generally speaking, people usually get it right. Zep's not going to touch it, he doesn't want to.
Just avoided this completely.
Doesn't want to get into it.
Pining over coffee and Shirley.
Funny about Zep, though, the other thing we should mention about the week down there was your monster coaching clinic, mate. Give us some feedback and thoughts off that.
Thank you, mate. I was glad not to get heckled from my colleagues in the crowd. Great job to Basketball Geelong in organising it and getting, you know, 40 coaches down there on a Thursday morning, on a work day, school day. Was awesome. Thank you to the under 14 Geelong boys who were awesome, awesome on the floor.
Took a day off school for it.
Most of them stuck around all day.
They became a floor wipers, Robbie.
Most stuck around.
It was good. It was good. Spoke about just some European concept stuff that we picked up through our MPP tour in Spain, through the Schweizer tournament in Germany. Was able to show a few sets and things that we stole from some of the other countries, and then just talked about how we defended a bunch of those actions. So if anyone does want the notes, we've got them in the BB office and we can shoot them out in an email.
You could just probably put them on social. You could probably put them on your social media, tweet them out,
Robbie.
Yeah. No, it was a really good clinic. It was great to, I guess, see examples on the floor. I echo you, the kids were great, but thought you handled it pretty well with the wheelies on the other court. Playing hard and making a lot of noise. But yeah, I think any time that coaches can get together, and I think there was 40 odd coaches in the building watching that, it was a great initiative by all.
It's and again, any chance you have to get along to a coaching clinic is always time well spent. Even if you take one thing out of it, it's going to help with your coaching. Always recommend it. I know we've got the BA Coaches Conference on Monday, Tuesday next week.
We do.
We've got Kerry Rupp in town on Wednesday at Tarneit, Thomas Carr College.
Great school, Robbie. One of the better schools in Melbourne, Thomas Carr College.
Yeah, the alumni is short, it'd be fair to say. I know we've got you guys both on court for a clinic fairly soon with your world champs. Experience, and we've got another coaching clinic which we won't announce just yet coming up to July. There are going to be plenty of opportunities for coaches to get on and see other people coach, which I think is always valuable for your own coaching.
The last part of the wrap, mate, like what do we think about the winners and the medalist teams and that? Like, we do need to talk about WA Metro. We gave Andrew Cooper a...
When you say we, it was mainly you.
All right, well, I just said, like, he has to win this thing, otherwise there's something wrong. And he went and won it. And that team was outstanding. I think the Metro, Vic Metro, WA Metro semi-final was one of the better games I've seen in a national championship in a fair while. Luke Travers, Luke Jackson, Wani Swaka, really big time throughout the whole week, but... Kib Forrest stood up in that semi-final, I think 6 of 6 from the three-point line. Pretty outstanding kind of effort. And then the other is in the top four on the boys' side. Tassie, you know, all week were consistent, gave everyone their best crack, and some really close battles throughout that tournament. Obviously, Queensland South, as we talked about, had athletes across the floor, played a really up-tempo style, and were able to come away with the silver medal on it.
It was really good, mate. Like, I think we spoke about during the week multiple times. Like, there was 8 or 9 teams on the boys' side that had at least one or two like good players. You're like, oh, damn, that kid's pretty good. And I think that was really, really exciting to see that there were just a couple of kids on every team that was able to go out and make some plays and, you know, obviously invested in their player development, because the one thing with those four teams that stand out, those top four finishing teams, is athleticism. Like, you got to be able to make plays full speed over the top of a bouncy Travers, Jackson, Bannon, Tattersall, and that's to make those plays ends up gold medal win to WA, who were tremendous in that semi-final.
Yeah, definitely.
On the girls' side, the thing that really stood out with the teams, that those top four teams, is they had multiple girls who had a really, really high skill set. And it was, they were able to make plays with both hands, off both feet, shoot the ball and make shots when they were open. You mentioned Vidmar before, South Australian Metro, outstanding. Lily Scanlon for us shot the three at 50%, outstanding. Kadee, outstanding. New South Wales Country, Palmer, fantastic. Yep. Like there are girls that who have the kind of upper echelon skill set stand out. And I think that's a challenge, definitely in what we speak about here in Metro, is you've got to be really skilled to make an impact in these games now. It's not enough just to be a really good rebounder. Jackson, very good rebounder, unbelievable on the low post, unbelievable working behind the backboard. So you've got to have it all right now.
I pose this to a few people, though, about Luke Jackson, is I don't remember an athlete having as big an impact just through rebounding as him.
Mm.
Like, I can't, you know, 10 plus years of Nationals, can't think of someone. So
he made 2 threes in the final too.
Having a skill, it's a point of difference. You know, everyone wants to be, you know, multifaceted and whatnot. If you're the best rebounder, you can impact the game big time.
For sure.
And then the other part is, from a national team perspective, you're always in great shape when everyone's got someone. Like, when the talent is spread over all of Australia, you're in pretty good shape. And we spoke about WA Country, you know, they had a couple athletes there that definitely have a chance to progress on. You know, Tassie, like, ACT, had, like, everyone had someone, and that always bodes us well from a national team perspective and long-term projection.
So focus now shifts to under-16s. So I think we had a Metro Country game last week.
Yes, Sunday.
I think it was.
One point game.
Down in Geelong. Close one, Robbie.
Yep.
Close one. So it's very early in their prep. Yep. So I'm sure both teams will use that to kind of figure out what's next in their evolution. Start to work on those 13, 14 different ways to defend the ball screen, Robbie.
If you need 13 or 14, you've screwed something up somewhere.
No. They'll be hard at work, I'm sure, in the next couple of months.
Excellent. So a couple of other things going on, obviously. 3-on-3 Asia tournament.
Yep.
It's just wrapped up a couple of days ago. The men claim the gold.
Yeah, Kilsyth Cobras, Owen Ottagy, and Nana Wannings, Tommy Wright,
Andrew Steele,
and Tommy Garlett from where the Kings, or wherever Garlett he's playing at the minute. But they did an outstanding job, and if you stayed up to watch the final, it was pretty awesome.
It was.
Pretty awesome little game.
It was. I must admit, Garlett looked like he was very much out on his feet on that last shot, and it was like, I just need this to end.
I forgot that a three meant it was over, and I'm thinking, what's he doing? And then bang, I was like, yep, no worries, good job, mate.
Yep. It was huge, and New Zealand got the gold in the women's. Yep. They rolled out Aussie girls in the semi-final. With Melbourne Tigers, Bec Cole, Melbourne Boomers, Maddie Garrick, Carly Smith, I'm not sure where she's playing, Bendigo. And Keely Froling from up in Canberra as well. So it is, I must admit, I was a bit of a hater on 3-on-3 originally, where it's like, hey, I'm not totally sure this is going to stick. I don't really, and in fairness, it was ignorance on my end more than anything else. I actually don't mind the game. Like, it's different. Like, it's certainly not 5-on-5 basketball, but there are a lot of tweaks. I think if you're not fundamentally sound, you will be exposed very quickly in 3-on-3. And if you can't defend, it's over.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't matter. If you can't defend, you cannot play 3-on-3. So it's a totally different game, I think. With it being obviously in the Olympics coming up, it's going to open a whole new can of worms for who's going to be eligible for it. And I think as coaches, it's something that we actually need to get our heads into a little bit, because there were a couple of times where you see New Zealand run a little back pick action. You'd see the Aussie guys run a little bit of flex action and post up. Like, there is some coaching that's starting to come into this now.
It's what I took from it. Like, who did we play in the final?
Mongolia
had this little like slip action. I was like, all right, we'll try and figure out how to put that into our flow and go with it. But I'm with you. Like, it's an exciting form. It is part of basketball now. And what I thought was great was Basketball Australia, FIBA, and the NBL really making sure it was on social media and at the forefront. Like, you know, that game, I wouldn't have watched it if it wasn't through those platforms. So that was great. And I think also use Owen as an example. He could be an international player at that level without any doubt. So just opening up another path for an athlete that has done NBL, has played as a junior Australian athlete, not knocking on the Boomers' door, but now has an opportunity there. So, yeah, great job. Way to get it, and on to the next.
Yeah, and so there's a whole heap of events coming up for 3-on-3 as well. Obviously, just check out, it's all over social. NBL have done a really good job of promoting that with BA as well. I would encourage you to have a little bit of a look at it. It's obviously the higher level you can see, the better it is. If you go and watch an under 12 3-on-3 game, you might tear your hair out. But if you go and watch a
or
decent
us three
league,
on the blacktop,
I feel like we could be okay.
Yeah, if Zeppel passed the ball, we'd be
all right. Okay, so we're not going to be all that great, it turns out.
You're not passing it to you two.
I know that. My range is about 2 feet, so if you can get it to me there, we're okay.
You're both screeners and ball movers.
That's a little rough.
I'm a shooter, not a hitter.
Yeah, well, get them up either way. But yeah, it is certainly something I'd encourage coaches to get involved in. There is an element of we now need to start teaching this as well, like the skill sets that are involved with 3-on-3 basketball. It's because it is, I do feel like it's going to stick around for a little bit.
I hear you there, Robbie, but I disagree with you there because I think what we've done as a nation is a lot better job of playing small-sided games in practice.
Yep.
And all I watched in the 3-on-3 was small-sided games.
Yeah,
so what I would encourage is just continuing to get athletes to understand how to play in that small environment, whether that be 2-on-2 or 3-on-3. And I think from there we can really help the athletes along.
Yeah, I think what our two programs do as well is that we really value in our shopping list, like Shula will call it, like competitiveness is one of those characteristics. You have to be a competitive beast to play 3-on-3. And then there's one-on-one offensive and defensive ability, which we both value in a 5-on-5 game, but in 3-on-3, that's the game as well.
Yeah.
So we're still teaching it in our NITP and MPP environments. And the good kids will get an opportunity.
Yeah, and conditioning is the other part of that, I think, that is really important. Like, I think that was in Shenzhen, which is where you guys were for your qualifiers.
Yep.
Looking at the guys and the girls at the end of that tournament, they were gassed. Like, there is no stop in 3-on-3 basketball. You might get a sub occasionally, but like, you need to be conditioned to play that. So as you say, it's decision-making under pressure. When fatigued, that's when you find out if you're any good at this or not.
Make your free throws, Zoe. It could have been over earlier.
Well, if Mongolia had stuck one of those last two free throws, they had two free throws to win it and clunked both, and thankfully gave us a bit of a chance there as well. So, very lucky. Zeb, you've come across something this week as well, which is shot to me in hysterics via text message, which I thought you'd enjoy. You want to take us through?
We've got to title this. It's Zep's rant or Zep's something.
Nah, it's just a little tidbit, mate. Just a little tidbit. I sent Robbie a text last night, which was sent to me by someone else. I can't remember who, but it was Paul Ruse.
He remembers. He just doesn't want a name drop.
Paul Ruse, Shirley. Shirley knows. Paul Ruse was on Triple M Footy talking, and he was chatting about the TAC Cup, and he kind of went off and said that the model at the moment is broken. He spoke about how it's become, like in Melbourne, the TAC Cup, the under 18 squads are a little bit mass participation. You've got 80 to 100 kids on the park at the same time, practicing, working on whatever they're working on. He compared that to the model up in Sydney, where he obviously spent a lot of time as the Swans head coach and might have had a lot to do with setting up their academy up there, where he essentially said that they have 30 elite kids on the park at the same time, and that's it, with quality coaching to go, to couple with that.
What
and
was the example he gave in Melbourne?
I think it was his son. His son's a member of the Sandringham Dragons at the moment, and he went down to training on Monday night or Tuesday night, and there was 80 kids on the park, and he was just kind of standing there observing and just trying to figure out, how is my kid getting better at this moment right here? So I think it's just an interesting discussion topic. We talk about it a lot in the office. What's footy do that we can do? What do we do better than footy? What can we take from footy? It's just interesting to hear something that we probably, as an outsider, look at as the TAC Cup, like, a pretty good model, that he thinks has some issues and flaws with it as well.
And I highlight stuff that we talk about all the time of how can we, have the best daily training environment, and what does that really look like, and what is the number of athletes on the floor, and, do we need to be more black and white earlier on when in our selection of squads, etc. And, it's all fair points, and the difference, I guess, in the models is one is heavily funded. I think he spoke about coaching salaries and what that looks like. where we still rely on volunteers to be running our Elite Pathway program. So, there's definitely good debate in it, and I think we're going to get a guest on in the coming weeks that's definitely got some great experience in performance pathways and also some strong opinions of it, which is always entertaining.
Love it.
We won't name the name yet, but that'll be a great chat and really insightful. I know the chats I've had definitely gets you thinking about, you know, what does the best daily training and weekly training and competition structure look like.
And Ruse was discussing it in regard to the current state of the AFL as well. So clangers are like an all-time high, goal kicking accuracy is pretty low at the moment, so he was kind of comparing it to, okay, these kids were in the TAC 2 years ago, 3 years ago, and have not been able to evolve their skill set to what is acceptable at the AFL level. So I think that was interesting.
I think it's always refreshing to review it as well. Like, it's very easy to say, hey, we've always done it this way, so this is how we do it. I think it's great that someone of his caliber has come out and said, hey, not totally convinced this works for what we need it to be. And it might be something that we as basketball need to look at as well. And then, you know, it comes off AJC's, you know, is that the best method for us picking potential boomers and opals? Sometimes yes, sometimes no. Are we seeing the best kids in the country? Have we got the 50 best kids at AJC's? Well, probably not. There's always a couple that slip through.
I think, and it comes from a chat I had yesterday. It came from conversations with Zep at Nationals. Often, whoever had the best skilled athlete on the floor, that team won.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure we are doing the best thing by our athletes in just playing games nonstop and not being able to spend more time on athlete skill development and whatnot. And that comes down to this article.
Mm.
You know, we're all stuck in mass participation training. You know, like at Clubland, I'm hearing over and over again, you've got half a court for your practice. You know, or you're sharing it with the other team. And these are the challenges we've got. And as coaches, trying to do the best thing for the athletes that you're working with. But sometimes, you know, like the challenges that are outside of your hands.
All good businesses reinvent themselves too. So there was a time where Amazon just sold books online. They now sell groceries and everything else under the sun. You know, the AFL, I'm sure, will look at it, and I'm sure Ruse will be a part of some committee that looks at it. But I think it's good for us too, like, to always review what we do and encourage, you know, people out there to, you know, review what you do as well, whether it's your program or your company or your business. I think that's how you evolve.
Absolutely.
Excellent. So that probably wraps us up for that portion of the podcast. We're into the split the kick and the extra.
Ooh,
bring it back.
So, Justin, you've usually been fairly critical of copying the "I disagree with this statement," so we'll let you agree with this statement. So, it makes it easy to have cranky Mike.
We like cranky Mike.
It's usually more entertaining. So, topic this week. So, Justin, you agree with this?
Okay.
It is okay to deliberately lose a game in a tournament to get a better matchup.
I love how he. It's okay deliberately for a matchup. Okay, who goes first, I guess?
I think person agreeing with usually goes first.
All right, whenever get the clock ready.
Yeah, you're on.
Okay, if the idea of a tournament is to win the tournament, I need to find the best path to be able to do that. So let's use the USA. Everyone thinks the USA are going to win the gold medal every year. Well, if that means that I'm going to play them in a quarterfinal by finishing top of our pool, I may want to finish second in our pool so that I can play Mongolia. There would be a great reason and rationale around that if the sole purpose and the outcome is to win that gold medal, to give yourself the best path to it. How you sell that to athletes is a great question. But in Europe, this is something that's used kind of all the time, and it's something that FIBA has tried to get on top of because of how much tournament play and strategy was coming into coaching. So it's not a brand new thing, but it is something that if winning is the absolute outcome, you've got to find the best way to do it. I would definitely encourage dropping a game here or there.
Always easy to call that after the loss than before it as well, I've found over the years. All right, Mike, what do you got?
Never thought I'd see the day, Robbie. Our compatriot here talking about point shaving. throwing games. And this is our under-17s national team. Come on, I'm not going to get too far into that. Mate, that is not the Australian way. If it's the European way, so be it. All you've got is a German last name. You're Australian. So that is not the Aussie way. We will play to win every game at the Olympics. If we fall with the US in the quarterfinal, we will play the US in the quarterfinal. We will do a good job of that too. Competition is the essence of everything that we do. Starts and finishes with winning the game. So at not one stage would I ever hope to see one of our coaches in Vic Metro. Country can do what they like, Robbie. Vic Metro coaches throwing a game at a tournament or trying to lose a game to tactically finish in a position to seed somewhere in the quarterfinals. That will never happen, Robbie, as long as I'm in this podcasting chair.
It is interesting now with the integrity department now.
Hope you have to answer to that.
I feel it's another stitch up, just let me say. But yeah, no, definitely I'm with you 100% on that. Want to clarify.
The Aussie way
is definitely take on anyone, defeat anyone.
All jokes aside, though, in basketball circles, like it has been kind of confirmed that teams in the past, Olympics, Worlds, have throwing games to get certain seeds.
Our first campaign when we got a silver medal, we knew the better path was to be third of our pool, not second. Now, at no point did we try and lose a game,
right. But
we understood that, well, if we come third, it's first or third are actually the better paths. And Turned out we were third. Canada got us, and they were a pretty strong group, but it gave us a nice clean pathway through, and didn't see the US till the gold medal game. So I think understanding that stuff matters, but definitely not trying to tank one to get it is not who we are.
No, you've avoided all legal ramifications with that one. The kick, that is you, Mike.
Oh, grumpy again.
Yeah.
Got two kicks this week, Robbie. First one, what do these numbers have in common, Robbie? The Pelicans are 16 for 20 from the foul line. Over two games, and the Warriors are 46 for 59. They've shot 39 more free throws in two games, Robbie.
I thought that was Adelaide v. United in the Grand Finals.
Ridiculous, Robbie. That's kick number one, so hopefully we get a little home.
The real numbers that matter are 2-0.
Little home cooking would be good. We've missed four free throws. The pity is we've only shot 20 of them. The next one, Robbie, is I was a little lonely in Geelong last week, and that's because I figured out that the AJCs were scheduled during the Victorian school holidays, which I know we have to accommodate for all the other states in our country of Victoria, but a school holidays nationals would be ideal in the host city.
Absolutely.
Or the host state, because I just think it's a better look, the environment's better, the feel's better, all the games are packed out because people can travel, people can come watch the home teams. Like, big country, it would have been awesome if every game was packed out for them. To support those, you know, those kids that come from Mildura's and Bendigo's and Traralgon. So I just think an AJC's, Robbie, during the school holidays in the home state would be ideal.
Definitely. I think the BA tried to schedule all Vic Country games and Metro games around the 5-7 time slot, but the challenge when it's not in school holidays is those kids are now running off to practice or after school stuff and etc. So the stadiums were definitely pretty empty.
A Friday night semi-final on a VJBL Friday night also does not
doesn't really help help things out.
I must admit, I was in Bellarine on Friday night for an under-12s game, and it is a long ass way from metropolitan Melbourne, there's no question, but
it's out there,
wouldn't have minded a stop off at the semi-final.
He's a little precious with Bellarine's a little far from Metro Melbourne.
VJBL and BA have stitched me up royal. I go to the greater Geelong area.
We've had our kick for the week, mate. We don't need
to
hear
country areas more than you go to country areas at this point. Our extra for this week is
wrap
Justin's.
This thing up, mate, please.
The extra is definitely for the Geelong Basketball Association and their outstanding running of another AJC.
Great part of the world, Geelong. I go there a lot.
It is a fantastic part of the world, but they do an outstanding job. The arena is really well suited to having a national championship. Plenty of space. You've got your shops there, packing in the streets not far, lots of accommodation right near the water. But really, the way that Geelong ran the tournament, the efficiency, no dramas with anything. And having a practice venue at the new AWA arena, it was just a great championship once again down there.
Awesome job. Awesome job. I met Dean, who's the CEO of Geelong Basketball.
Does
down
there.
Does
a great job there too.
And I met him as he was recording all the video, like doing all the the data to USBs and helping the teams out just get their film together. And just to see the CEO of the organisation be the guy who was getting the film from the video to the computer to the hard disk for the teams that were visiting, awesome job to him, and also to Herbie for doing a lot of the organising during the week.
I referred to Herbie as Jackie Moon because he was player, coach, promoter and everything else that week. But great support staff down there, and really a friendly environment, and well done again. Hope they get another one soon.
Yeah, most definitely. That's it for us this week. So I don't know where we are next week. We might be offsite. We'll see how we go.
I think we'll be offsite.
We might be offsite next week. We'll confirm that. It looks like these will probably drop on Fridays from here on in as well. We're just too time poor, it turns out, to get this thing done, edited, and produced on a Thursday afternoon.
Some good weekend listening, though.
It will be. You can listen to it on your way to your game on Friday night. And if you're in Geelong, you can probably listen to two or three on your way down there as well. So big thanks to everyone that listened. Thanks to you guys for jumping in as well. And again, if you do want to interact with us, you can do it on social, not Mike. You can just email him. But you can get us on Twitter, Facebook, anything like that as well with the hashtag TalkingSplit, and we'll pick up all your information from there. Thanks for listening, and good luck to your coach.